Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Marty Wilde MBE has been rocking the world really since the 1950s. Born at the beginning of the Second World War, he wasn't really spotted until 1957 when performing at London's Condor Club by impresario Larry Parnes. By 1958, he was one of the leading British rock and roll singers along with his backing group, the Wildcats. Still performing today, he embarks upon a UK tour and he's coming to Briley Hill Civic on the 24th of this month. I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago and began by asking when did he realise that he had this talent and how he actually started performing?
Well, it's a good question. I never thought I was talented in some ways, but in other ways I believed. I know that's a strange thing to say, but it's very difficult to answer that one. I'm going to sound unconceited or too conceited,
You must have played in bands at school and things like that, and then that would have sort of given you that confidence and that inspiration to think, I could do this.
Yeah. Well, what happened with me? I can't give an answer, in actual fact, but I was always singing as a child from a very, very young age. I can remember singing for my father and the soldiers. My father stood me to sing to the boys, and I sang a song about my father. It was called The Son of Sergeant Smithy, because Smith was our surname. Hmm. It still is. And so I was singing from an early age. It was in me. It was something in me. It's just like, you know, some ladies out there are called to nursing and from a very young age. I was called for singing, and I was called to sing, and I loved it. I enjoyed it. My father used to, which was unusual, used to sing harmonies. He very rarely sang the melody. So when anything came on the radio in those days, he would be singing a harmony, and I picked up on harmonies. So it was just something in me. And then when I was about 11. About 11, I learned to play the ukulele from a boy in school. He brought a ukulele, and I said, that's a great, great thing. Show me how do you play that? He showed me a few basic chords, and that was it. So I got a ukulele, and then I started to sing to people. My father, at that point, was a bus driver, so I used to, and they used to allow people to go out on weekends to take a whole bus, providing that it was all done bona fide, of course. Hmm. They would take a bus out and they would go to somewhere like Southend or somewhere like that, or Ramsgate, and upstairs on that bus, I used to sing to them with my little uke, and they loved it. And it kind of, you're asking what gave me confidence, and it was that, playing that uke in front of those people on the top of that damn bus.
So if I came to your house then in the 40s and 50s and I sat in your front room, what would I have seen and heard?
In what way, Clive?
Well, I mean, you know, what things were you... Did you have a television? Were you watching things on television? What records were you buying at the time as a youngster? And you already said that your dad sung harmonies. So, you know, how much of an influence were your parents on you?
Well, my father was, musically, no question about that. I came through that whole thing, like the Guy Mitchells. Guy Mitchell was a very popular singer. Then Frankie Lane, who was my favourite. And then, of course, then rock and roll came in. So it could have been any of those things at any one time. Once Elvis came in, that changed everything for me. And I used to have... obviously the Elvis records, and I was singing to them like everyone else, every other guy was doing at the time. And they were my influences, they were my basic influences.
So, I mean, we've looked at your music. Were you any good at school academically?
No, Clive.
I admire your honesty, poor. You know.
Oh, no, I was very poor. In fact, it's been the bane of my life in a way, because I regret. I had such a fragmented upbringing, really. It wasn't anybody's fault, but it just was. And my school days were interrupted by a war, you know. Mm-hmm. And all the children suffered the same way. We all did. I had a habit of really switching off, which I still have to this day. Maybe it's what helped me with my writing. And I used to switch off in school, and when the teacher was talking, I'd be tapping, and I'd have this song in my head, and I'd be, oh, that's great, that harmony part there, fabulous. And then he'd say, Smith, what are you doing? And I'd say, oh, sorry, sir, what did I just say? And I'd say, and that's it, and I'd get the cane or whatever. Hmm. So that was me. That was, my education could have been good, but a lot of it was very fragmented, which wasn't all my fault, and I've regretted it. I would say to any youngster out there, obviously, try to get as education is obviously a very key thing in a young person's life. But it, unfortunately for me, it wasn't to be that way.
Now, as I said at the beginning, you weren't really spotted until 1957 when you were performing at the Condor Club in London. And that was down to Larry Parnes, of course. And, of course, in 1958, you were already one of the country's leading British rock and roll singers. So you were clearly on the circuit. You were performing. Who were your competitors, would you say? Whose singles did you have to watch out for who might have got a higher chart position than you?
Well, it would have been obviously either Cliff or Tommy Steele or Terry Dean at that time. They were the early ones. Terry was a good singer, and Tommy and Cliff. So yeah, it could have been any. And of course there were breakthrough acts coming through. People were coming out of nowhere, and then sort of like disappearing. But I mean, most of the competition would have been from America, always from America. Mm. But there again, as I say, Cliff was coming out with great records, and Tommy was, but in the Tom's songs changed from rock and roll to much more sort of light music and entertainment, to entertain the people.
Now, you've written songs for The Casuals, Lulu, Status Quo, to name but three, and there's loads more. But which do you prefer, writing or performing?
A good question. I honestly don't know, really. I adore performing. I absolutely love it. But I also, writing is if you're onto something good with a song, and it's going along fine, or you then it's great. But sometimes it can be a little bit depressing because you want it to be better. And I've always strived to try to be melodic and think of good titles and things like that. I think they're both equal, really. I adore both. They're very important to me. I mean, the biggest money earner has been songwriting, never entertaining.
Really? Why?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because with Kim, we had all those hits. We
That's
had all
Kim
that,
Wilde, your daughter, of course.
Yes, and we had all the publishing. We had, we owned the publishing and everything else. So, and there was a vast amount of money in that. And that's where the days when they were, you were selling records and vinyl and God knows what else. But the sales in those days, in the 80s were very high, big sales. So there was a lot of money to be made. Songwriters in the old days, it's a good comparison to like songwriters of today, because they might get, someone, they're looking for streaming and you don't get paid hardly anything for streaming. So, when our records were played in the old days on the radio, you got pounds, shillings and pence, you got money. You got real money. You might get a 300 or 200 pounds or whatever, and each time your record was played, that money would be coming in, So, but now it's changed completely, and the writer is unless you're a really huge, great American star or a British star, you don't make much money on writing at all. Not really. Not the way you used to.
No, I can imagine. And as you say, streaming, I think, sort of, kills a lot of it. But if you've got an idea for a song, how do you go about translating and augmenting that from your mind to manuscript. I admire anybody that can write songs. I mean, I've said before on this program, I'm a musician, I play guitar, but when it actually comes to writing, and I studied music, not a hope in Moses. So how do you go about doing it?
Well, it's very strange, really, because I don't read music, and I don't write music, and my education in some parts of music is poor. But for example, sometimes it's a strange thing. It's almost like a religious experience, because you can be listening. What happens with me, and I think this happens with other writers, is if you listen to, for example, the score of E.T., that some of those parts in that thing, which John Williams wrote brilliantly, I love E.T., the music is stunning, but parts of that, he was influenced by other great composers. You can hear the parts, you can actually hear the little segments that he took from that one of those other great classic melodies and put into his thing. And then we all do that. Everybody does that. I don't care who they are. If you listen to anybody these days, their musical influences come from, in most cases, they're coming from other people. Now and again, you'll get a freaky thing where somebody like Elton John will come in with something very, very fresh and very new. Like your song, which when that came out was a very sort of, there was a lot of things that were unusual in that song, the lyrically, the way it's but scanned and everything. But with me, if like I'll be let's say, oh, I don't know, think of any modern day artist, and I'm just looking now on my computer, and I'm getting up a thing, and I mean I can, if I listen to a song on my computer, suddenly I can look away, and suddenly another melody comes into my head, inspired by that actual melody. It doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes it happens with titles. Sometimes you get a title, and you think, "Oh, I had a title a long time, well, about 4 years ago, called Running Together," and I thought it's great because you can compare running together with life together, with people, your partner or whatever, you know, you're getting through life and doing your best, you know, and things like that. So I mean, sometimes it comes from a title, sometimes it comes from just in your head. That they are the weird ones. They are the weird ones, because sometimes it'll just be like da da ba da ba 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 ba, whatever, like that, and you think, oh well, hold on a minute, put that onto my phone, and it goes onto my phone these days, and then off I go, and then I'll work out the chords to it, but it is an odd thing. I mean, I think I've said it many times, I think everybody can write a hit record. Everybody can definitely write one hit song. The thing is to then continue writing hit songs.
Yes,
is a different thing entirely. And I also think that if you said to someone, well, you know, you could come out of prison when you've written your hit song, most people wouldn't come out of prison. They'd be in there for life. And maybe sometimes, you know, when I can't get an idea, I might be stuck in there for life. But so far, I've been reasonably lucky.
You've done very, very well, if you think about it. And of course, as part of your tour, which you're doing at the moment, you're coming to Brierley Hill Civic, along with the Wildcats, on Sunday, the 24th of March, which starts at 7:30 in the evening. What can we expect from this show?
Oh, nostalgia. Definitely nostalgia. And looking at life, you know, my show is never too serious. I don't want to play the rock star anymore. I want to talk to people like I talk to my friends, and you know, so when people come into that theater to see that show, I'm talking to them just like I'm talking to you. I just talk straight, and whatever comes in my head, sometimes I get shot down by the band when we come off because I might have said something rude, but in most cases, you know, I just absolutely live for what I do on stage, and I love it. And if people you know, when I mean, a teenager in love is, I mean, for a man of 85 to think teenager in love is, it's kind of crazy. But when you see people's faces smile, you realize that's what you're there for. You're there to lift those people for that moment. You're taking them back to their youth. You know, you're taking the pressure off there. Like, we've got enough pressure in this country at the moment. So anything I can do to make people smile is absolutely, it gives me a wonderful thrill. I know that sounds cornball, but it's not. I get a thrill.
But that's
doing
why
that.
You do it. That's why you're in the industry, and that's why you're doing it, as you say, at 85.
Yeah,
because,
well, I
people
mean,
love
I,
it.
I think, yeah, I mean, when, to a certain extent, when I, all through the 60s, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, to a certain extent, my ego was there. Everyone has to have a certain amount of ego. But as you get older, you know, you've got the pretense and the ego. So you don't have that kind of, you don't have to go and show off. You don't have to just be yourself, you know. And that's what I made up my mind about 4 years ago. I thought, I've had enough of going out and being Marty Wilde, you know, the big hunky guy coming out, you know, trying to look fantastic and saying the right words and the right thing. No, I thought, you're not doing that anymore. You're going to talk to them like you assume, like you do, as I've already said, like your mates. And it really works. And I think people have enjoyed our show more now over the years, because we're no different to them. But I mean, I shouldn't be saying, because you're supposed to be. You're supposed to have all these artists on a big pinnacle, but they're just the same as you. You know, they're good in their bad days, and it's amazing how simple people are. I'm talking about me now, because as I say, my pleasure is to see people's faces enjoying what I'm doing, and I love that. I absolutely love it.
I remember many years ago seeing Cyndi Lauper in concert, and between the songs she came and sat on the apron of the stage with a microphone, and she talked to us in exactly the same way that you have just described. And I learned more about her life and her upbringing, and the challenging upbringing that she had. But it was as if she'd come round to my house, put the kettle on, you know, and out come the biscuits, and we start talking. And I think that's really, really important to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And she is a fine writer. She's a very good writer, a very good, very, when she gets down to it, she writes very meaningful, tuneful songs, which have been, obviously, you know, she's had hits with them, but she writes a good lyric as well, a good melody line.
Now, I was going to say I mean, you said a second ago that you're 85 years young and you're still swinging your pants and those of others, of course. But looking back on your career so far, because let's be mindful, your career is still going, you're still performing. What would you say has been your present day success so far, your key to that present day success, that one thing or person?
I think just colossal love of music. I mean, I am a very up and down person, very, although people don't always see that side of me. I can be up one minute and down the next, but what I've realized now that I'm 85, I can be very easily inspired. I can be down in the doldrums and someone will pick up the phone, call me and say something to me, and that completely changes my day. And I think it is that kind of, thankfully, you know, some people, when they get depressed or anything, they stay in that depression. I don't. You know, thankfully, if something comes along and changes, and I'm very easily inspired. And I think it's my colossal love of music. I adore music. My list of songs that I love range from all the great classical music by the classical composers, to a lot of the tracks that are in the American charts, to songs by Elton or by Elvis or by Cliff Richard, whoever, you know, makes good. I love it, and I play them, I play every day my music. It lifts me, and it has been. I don't have religion. I'm one of those that lives alone, really, with that kind of thing. But music is my religion. There's no question about that. It can make the hairs on my arm stand up dead straight when I hear a great classical piece or a great pop song. You know, because pop songs, people put down pop. It's just a pop song. No, it's not just a pop song. If it lifts you and it gets you through a day and you're still humming the damn thing, six or 20 or 40 years later, it didn't do so bad. Just probably a bit more than some of the politicians do anyway.
Looking back on your career so far then, is there anything that you would have done differently?
Yes, I would have learned. I would have. Wish I could have learned to play the piano. I really do.
That's my one big wish.
Yeah, I mean, I play the guitar and everything. I play chords, but it's a different feel. It's a different thing. Piano is the key, I think, to a lot of writing. And I think also I have to keep looking up words. I thankfully on my phone I just go on to my part of the what's it well the, what they call the all
the, I'm the app one of the apps here.
Yeah, one of the apps, and up come word. And what does that mean? What does that word mean? And then of course, and I have to. I mean, one of the words, my favourite one, was eclectic. I've never heard of the word eclectic, so I know basically what it is and what it means, and I have to keep doing that because the English language is constantly changing, and some of the older words you don't hear so much now. So, love of music and education.
What's next after the tour then, Marty?
I think after the tour, I've been thinking of maybe almost retiring.
No, but don't.
See, I've been saying that for the last 10 years. And
no.
I haven't done it, so
don't be ridiculous, man.
I probably won't, but I don't know. I think I just want to be... I just want to be happy. I want to do things for people if I can. I want to lift people. I love my country very much, and I love my people, and I want to see them back to what they were, and I want to be part of that helps them, you know?
So your tour is coming to Briley Hill Civic on Sunday the 24th of March, 7:30 in the evening. Where can we get tickets?
I don't know, Clive.
Well, shall I tell you? MartyWild.com. Yeah. That's a good place. Ah. And also your ticket agency, SongKick.com.
Oh, now you're educating me again.
Stick with me, kid, you'll be fine.
Another part of my education, Clive. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I can't wait. And I will adore every minute I'm on that stage, and I can't wait. I can't wait to see Dudley again as well. It'd be lovely.
Well, break a leg, as they say. Good luck with the continuation of the tour. Marty Wilde, thank you very much indeed. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 6:00 p.m. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by me, Clive Payne, and produced by Andy Caddick.